But since there is no such thing as total death, it will simply exchange itself through its degradation or breaking apart, if you haven't embalmed the poor dear to the point where it hangs around another multitude of eons, you have to realize that you simply move back into your particulate form, your elemental form. And as long as there is even one cell remaining of you, you can be duplicated. Because as long as your DNA structure survives, you can be replicated. It doesn't hardly sound like gathering up a handful of mud or cutting somebody's rib out. What a silly concept. How silly you are. How black magic oriented you are. You would rather watch David Copperfield pull a fast one on you than to watch him do what he can do best, and that's practice the ancient arts of mysticism. You want to ascend, but you have to ascend only after you are into a gaseous state lighter than air. Then you're going to ascend. And believe me, you can accomplish that through atomic energy. All you got to do is just blow off a bomb. And if it's close enough to you, your particulate is going to hang around in the atmosphere for a long time. Quite radioactive, I might add. And quite indefinable. So when you reduce truth into its component parts, you have soul and physical matter. And both are a coalescence of frequency, energy, particulate, charged particles in a wave, pulse, electric universe. And those I just plagiarized from Walter Russell. I did not say US and P, did I? When you are talking about the very life form, how can you plagiarize it? There is only one. And perhaps a zillion ways for you to perceive to reach that one. And you're going to run into the periods of voidance. As all electric flow achieves through its journey, you are an expanding being. Let us just say that how interesting it would be if someone took a sword and cut you from your neck right through your torso. What would happen? Everything would fall out, wouldn't it? And it would fall down. The warmth of the vapor would come up. And especially in this room where you are at 98.6 Fahrenheit within, you're going to have a smoke screen, aren't you? Because it's cool enough in this room that if you were eviscerated, the vapor would rise. The rest of it would fall down. Right? Now we've got to talk about gravity. And again, I cannot talk about gravity without talking about the truth. And this could be perceived as utilizing someone else's material. No. Truth is truth is truth. And gravity is not dropping apples from the pizza tower. And who was Isaac Newton? Great man. Are you plagiarizing if you take something out of the Principia Mathematica, and how many in this room even know what the hell that is? Well, it's Newton's book. But guess what? Even with Newton, guess what? He wrote in one language, and Voltaire had it translated. I've heard of Voltaire. Who cares what you've heard of? What do you know about Voltaire? Well, I can tell you now that Voltaire didn't speak the language, so he had his mistress, not his wife, his mistress, the Countess Chateau de Lay. Look it up. That's always confirmation to Dorma when I throw something like this at you. You can look it up. He had his mistress translate Newton's work. But you can also honor Newton, forget Jesus being born, because remember, Jesus was not his name until after the fact, when Paul changed his name to protect the guilty and did his travels spreading the wrong word all over the world. So he travels to Greece, and he labels Jesus the Anointed One. So you've already based your entire existence on the lie, but don't misunderstand for one second what I'm going to say to you right now. The adversary, the Illuminati, the Masonic Order, what is their cornerstone, their epitome, their pyramid eye? Jesus. Don't you forget it for one second. They are claiming that Jesus is the one they're waiting for to finish, to be the base. Well, that does not coincide. Their activities, never mind what you know, is their intent toward God, truth, enlightenment? No. Their intent is to maintain secrecy, ritual, whatever. So when they come forth and they say, we honor Lucifer, this good and beautiful morning star, this perfection of God, what do they mean? Unless you go back and study and get truth, you haven't any idea. And what does Lord Michael have to do with this Lucifer? Oh, well, he kicked him out of heaven and, you know, he did all this stuff. Well, where do you think you came from? What is the physical basis of you? Did you come from the stars? Did you come from the earth? Are you truly a handful of mud? And if so, did you just get mud from the Nile and the Amazon, and did you just go flickering around into your gardens of Eden and gather up handfuls of mud? And then did all those women wait while you matured, Adam, and were willing to give one of your ribs so that God could now carve something to fit your ideal? And if there was only Adam and Eve and they begat, there were so many begats. This is an incestual insanity you've got going here. If there were only two people, how did all those fifth and sixth generations get here? When Adam wasn't to blame. So if you go off there and, but you mustn't question. Because this is the Holy Bible. Who said? You haven't the vaguest idea who said. Well, I think Moses said. You mean Moses, the one that brought those tablets down from the mountain after he took off to somewhere, somehow, with God for a whole long period of time, don't you think Moses got hungry? And how was he strong enough to bring all of those emerald tablets down that mountain? Do you feel foolish? Do you ever feel foolish? And don't some of your indoctrinated religions require that you either dip yourself in water or get under the drip or whatever is required and raise your hand? And I swear that I believe every word of this book to be truth. You have just created the biggest lie of all. But you see, in the Masonic order, as you come up through these degrees, they do the same thing to you. At each degree, you've learned some more, and you do these silly practices, these silly rituals, and I might say, all right, think about it a minute. What did you actually say? Well, at some point in the Masonic order, you have said, if my brother tells the secret, I will cut his throat. Oh, but that's silly. It doesn't really mean that. Oh, yes, it does. Sorry about that, guys. It is just that while you were unillumined, you thought it didn't mean anything. But you get up past the 33rd, and it means something. Sure does. It means something. This is the way evil grows. Misunderstandings. Implicitness. So as you began to evolve back into truth, you have to put explicit meaning into what you do. And that is only a mark of respect for the judge, not contempt. It isn't going to please him, but it is the ultimate of respect for his station. We have come a long way, babies, and it's the wrong direction. And the people like Eustace Mullins should not ever have had to fight these struggles alone. Or the Ezra Pounds who came. That really introduced Eustace to moving forward. So we can go right back to speaking of Eustace Mullins and Ezra Pound and associate, make that connection as a matter of fact with Isaac Newton, Principia Mathematica, and gravity. You either have truth, and there is always some truth. And an ignorant person will admit, I don't know. Let's find out. Well, you better get this thing off her, because she's going to go and make racket. I'm sorry, Eustace, I didn't give you your 2-minute warning.
Did you want Little Crow up here?
I sure do.
Can you come forward, Little Crow? Please. On your right. Did you want...
I got to, yeah.
It's equal
Crow.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Crow.
Eustace Mullins.
This is Eustace Mullins.
Nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Good
so glad to see you. Thank you.
Me too.
Thank you. I know, you're just glad to see you. Oh. We always need to pause and appreciate the great moments that we're allowed to experience. Coming into life is a very difficult experience, but one which needs to be looked at. All of you want to call it death. What you do with your birthdays and your celebrations is celebrating death. I'm 1 year closer to death. Or are you seriously counting birthdays that say, oh, I am this many days closer to birth? Depends on your attitude. It's been a long struggle, hasn't it, son, to come back into life? And what the pits are about. Why would I do this? Why would I go through death half a dozen times, seven times around, just to live in this? Well, this one has to bring you back into your spiritual truth. And he's got to participate in bringing legal justice back as your mode of operation out of the pits. And we shared his tape about his experience as he emerged from this frying pan and jumped into the fire. And he's not the same. And he's not the same, but we're getting closer to being the one. And understanding comes again from the soul. And somehow all of these things cease to be important. And I would say here before everyone that you now have two of the most outstanding soul energies that you will ever meet, facing off with each other in brotherhood. And I'm going to indulge myself by asking Little Crow to just share with us, if he would, briefly, what he has been through lately. And then I want all of you to listen to him. And I want you to explain to me how it's not possible to intermingle with energy forms greater than what you consider yourself to be. And having to recognize and stand on the responsibility of it being yourself. Because you are the only way that God has to express in these terms. These terms. The tree has absolutely no problem being a tree. And a reflection of that perfection that is God. You can't adjust to anything. And it becomes more acceptable and more believable to believe the lie than to simply believe truth. So we can say, and Little Crow might tell you, everything is truth. And that's absolutely a fact. Everything there is only truth. It might be a lie. But you will explain it, and its explanation will be truth. Let us talk about the truth. What are you looking for? What is the truth? Oh, wow, when I find the truth, I got it. And maybe I can get it from the Indian way. Because, you know, they, Indian, he speak truth. Indian, he be human. And once you have learned that truth and God have no color, no race, but don't kid yourself, creed is involved. And this is another way they lie to you. They being your adversary, your own desire to be flesh, bone, luxuriate, live with the due respect your ego deserves, no matter what you've done. Dump it on somebody else, blame someone else, and then let someone you've murdered save you from your what? Sins. Sins are nothing but errors. And they become criminal most of the time because you deliberately do them. Does that mean God doesn't forgive you? You better work on forgiving yourself. God's going to let you do whatever you want to do. But he's also going to help us as we grow. And his men, without touching, without very many encounters, has trained my scribe, my speaker. He hasn't let her get away with goofing off. He lets her get away with her own little stories to herself while he says, take responsibility. And then he has to go back and study his own position and take responsibility. But her journey's different. We didn't have to cook her this time. You're into the most wondrous days of your experience. And when souls meet and finally see a direction, there's not going to be any stopping this. That's like saying, we're going to stop all wind from blowing ever again. It's not going to happen. So, Little Crow, please tell us who you are. You've gotten so skinny.
Yes, and truly. Good morning. Yeah, I'm really honored to be here with you this morning. Coming up through the fog, you always have those questions, what am I doing in this fog? But then I said, well, it'll break and it'll clear, so we made pretty good time. Is this going to be better if I hook it on here? Yeah, thank you. How about that? You can hear that? Okay. First, let me say I'm very honored to be here with our good friend, brother. I've read your words, and I've always been fascinated by words, because as I've shared with you many times, as the woman who raised me said, you must learn the language. You must learn the language. Language is composed of words, and as manipulative as they become, they are still what some cultures are moved with, and the structure of things take form as a result of words. And so in reading the words of the works of my brother here, I was very impressed and excited to realize that there was someone that was out there challenging the system in their own language, and taking the time and having the compassion for the system to explain and define their words to them, as they have forgotten what they've meant since they were first created. So it's my honor to be here this morning in his presence. Who I am is again Teyaduta, Hidred Nation, Little Crow, generic, and have come more recent from a kind of an interesting experience of dying and rebirthing six separate times in a six-day period with a physical condition as it resulted in a sustained temperature of 106 degrees, and that did not break until New Year's morning. And during that period of time, cooking with my own knowledge that this would be what would occur, because the question was put to me, am I sure this is what I want to do? Am I sure that this is the way I wish to proceed? It was nothing of a physical nature, no flu, no cold, no medical, physical thing. It was purely for me a spiritual experience. And in that experience, I emerged with several things which, for me, as an individual of who I am, feeling that I had received a great insight into my own questions, into things which I was able to reflect upon a million times. As I said in the tape, there was a pillow that I kept between my legs, between my knees, and in the fetal position. And that pillow changed form with every thought that I had. And every thought that I had, was carried to its maximum, what I call the ultimate. It was carried to and came back to the pillow. And a new thought, maybe the same thought, but a different way in which to see it. And it would come back again. And then I would see that a different way. And it would come back again. And I figured several trillion times over a six-day period. Trillions and trillions of times, the same thing, seen differently, perceived differently, and yet always returning to its form, that which I saw was the pillow, reducing itself to two small flags, off in a distance somewhat, looking at the distance and from your knees to your eyes, and taking different shape and form, but always returning, always returning. He gave to me one that everything is the same, but only in a different form, which I've always been talking about since the oral tradition in which I was instructed gave me the same information, that everything is the same, only in a different form. Looking at what my needs might have been during that period of time, I have no idea. Knowing that things that had been wrong with me physically were corrected, my knees, I read my brother saying something of his knee there having cartilage damage, and both of my knees had been busted severely previously, and the damage was there. I walked different, you know, and different thing. Now that was all cooked away, and I don't have any problems with my knees. I had cataracts. My brother had cataract surgery. Cataracts were cooked away and are continually flaking out of my eyes. I'm continually wiping stuff out of the corner of this eye, which the cataract was the most severe. When I was here in August, I had cataracts and bad knees, and I'm here today. I see better, and I don't have any physical problems. I have no physical problems. Prostrate or any other problems are all gone. In other words, I'm at peace with my body. I'm at peace with my physical self, which gives me an incredible amount of energy, but it also has given me an obligation to take care of myself a little bit better. So I don't work as long, but I focus with much more intensity during the time that I do work, but I do take the time for myself. I've knocked off my 18-hour days, my 20-hour days, and I've condensed it down. If I'm lucky and don't cheat or lie, I can say I put in maybe 5 hours now. I don't want to get entirely away from it, you know, the self-sacrificing, all-encompassing, caring for everyone type of person. So I say, I probably do 5 hours now, but I go and I rest and I take care of myself. The idea of death, the idea of dying, the idea of wellness and health, the idea of sensuality, sexuality, identification, the ideas of manipulation. All of these thought processes were redefined. Also, one very, very basic one was the one of faith. The one of faith, and the one of that in faith in itself, that in this process of knowing that at any time I was going and leaving this world, this little voice, my voice saying, go to the breath, go to the breath. Breath is the infinite sign of life. It is the infinite quality of life. Without breath, there is no life as we know it. And yet, that breath is infinite, it's immortal, and it sustains. And what it does for me, and as it has shown me, is that it changes form. It changes form. God, in this instance, Wakantanka, the creator, the mother father creator, became a blue light. Very small dot of blue light. And I, in my journey with it, became a kind of, I don't know, orange, gold light, if you would, just for my reference in my mind. And each time this journey would begin with the question and the thought, it was to follow this blue light, to go with it. And where I went with it was through this immensity of the universe itself. And how I describe the universe is the feeling of going through an enormous room full of people and not being able to see them, but to know that they are there. As we are surrounded with that type of energy constantly and consistently, we are always in a room full of people as just kind of a way to explain it. But we can't see them, even if we feel we are alone. And then to hear the sounds of the universe as I move through, and particularly this one issue in talking about death in itself, was to be cognizant of the fact that so many people are not aware that breath is infinite and do not have the chance to focus on the last breath, or to follow the breath, or return to the breath. And so they finish and complete, do whatever it is they need to do and in their journeys and travel on and so on, return again. But to hear and to feel the pain and the agony, if you will, of those moments, and the millions of people, thousands of people who pass and die, children, old people, elderly, the people who die as a result of violence and at the hands of others, to feel all of those things and to be aware of it and to sense it and to actually, literally, physically almost feel that, feel it, you know, to feel the compassion and the sorrow, and to see what death in itself is the transitional point between realization of the ending breath and the beginning breath, where again, turnaround, I call it turnaround time, is minimized. To feel that, to have sympathy and empathy for that compassion, and to realize how we as human beings have been manipulated, how we manipulate ourselves, to find out what the issue of ego is about, that it is a man-made defense mechanism. It isn't created, nor was it created by the creators, but it is something we've taken on to ourselves. I believe each one does what we're here to do. And when someone always asks, what am I to do? I say, you're doing it. I believe breathing is our ultimate responsibility. And this fact of looking for the right road, the proper road, you know, it's all motivated by our perceptions of our needs, what we as individuals need, what we need, determines what it is we do to accomplish that need and the means by which we accomplish to reach those ends are hopefully based upon spiritual reality within ourselves, the sacredness of our being. And therefore, we should attempt or we would attempt somehow to demonstrate that sacredness by how we interact and react with other people. It was a scary time for me. I began to feel some fear. And some of the, at the very beginning was human things because I had things in my room that I didn't want people to see. I had stuff around, you know, we all have little trinkets and things and books and writings and things we don't want people to find, or we want to have time to get rid of it, or if you will, shred it. We want time to be able to shred some of that. I've not met too many people who were willing to let everything they've ever written be at the exposure to everyone. And so I thought about that. That was the, you know, the epidermic level. That's really the peripheral level. That's right up there where you can see out and the epidermis. And then the deeper levels were the fear of loss and losing my family and separating from my family with things unsaid and things undone. That's pretty standard stuff. And then the feeling of not having completed or not having seen or accomplished. So that fear, not resolving or putting resolution, and I don't know for sure if we ever do because it's a continuum also of the spirit, the resolution to relationships and struggles and things which are incurred during our life journey. Do we ever have the opportunity to say, I'm sorry? At the right time or at the right place to the right person or the persons that we would want to. And then I thought about my grandchildren, my social immortality, that there were things that I had not accomplished yet that I wished to see and do with them. And the amazing process of that is I realized I had the control to do that. I had the decision. It was my decision to remain or to go. Based upon what I had seen and what I felt, the ultimate faith that in realizing that we are indeed in control of our situation and that we do have the control of it, and to realize that it's okay to make and to go and to come. I missed your a week ago, I believe, or 2 weeks ago when you were in Fresno there, the court. As I was attending a good brother of mine who the night before began to bleed and to cough blood and things, and he'd been ill for some time, but this was inoperable cancer and due to the tar and the nicotine and that damage caused by cigarettes. And he had quit smoking some 14 years ago, and we had been brothers for about 2 years. He had found our gathering, and it had made such a great change in his life, and he spoke of that constantly. But he had never been well
for the last 20 years or so. He was whatever well is. He was constantly at doctors and different medications and diabetes and operations and losing a toe and his foot bleeding and then the internal things. And then finally ending up not able to sleep or rest, not able to lie down to find any peace. And he was very tired. And I just knock on wood that I was able to be there, for they called me and he had asked for me. His doctor had asked that I come. And so I stayed with him during that time, and that's why I wasn't able to be with my brother and sister and those who went with you up there. But I was able to offer him and to talk with him and to bless him and to pray with him and to let him know that I was there. He lapsed into unconsciousness from his medication, but as we walked into the room, he was able to open his eyes, and I was with his roommate. His roommate of many years, his friend. And he opened his eyes, and he had such a peaceful look on his face. His eyes were, of course, a little bit enlarged. He was fighting for his breath. And he looked at us with this kind of curious smile, and he said, I love you guys. And he closed his eyes. And he never opened them again from that point. After, and I dialogued with him, of course, by working with his third eye and talking to him, whispering into his ear, speaking into his ear. Not that I would say that did any good, but that seems to help sometimes to people in transition, that they know it's okay. They know it's okay to let go and to move on, to move along, get on with it, if you will. And 3 hours later, he passed on, he passed over. The ultimate faith, the thing which I held on to was that if I believed in what I believed, then I would be okay, whatever that means, whatever being okay means. And so I emerged from this, and the fever broke on New Year's morning, and I emerged from this process, and I couldn't walk. I couldn't stand up. I was disoriented. I couldn't talk. I had been cooked. My voice box had been cooked. My teeth had been enamelized. My lips had been cooked. Just everything. I could stand up and maybe move a little bit, but I really practically had to crawl to the bathroom at first, and then as I began to get reorientated, I was able to do a little more. I had no appetite. I ate nothing during that period of time. I went into it weighing about 210 pounds and came out at 185. So that's my present weight, 185, 186, somewhere in there. And I've never felt better in my life. But coming out of it and watching my body put itself back together was an interesting aspect, because the spirit stayed detached for about 5 days. It watched itself learn to walk, and I got in the car and was able to drive. I went to my office and went to my home, visited with my family, but I couldn't sustain it. It wasn't very sustained. You know, I wanted to get back in the harness. I wanted to pick up the phone and answer the phone and start fixing problems. And I just said, to hell with this. I'm going home. And you go back to bed and get back and rest. And finally the appetite began to return. And the appetite returned, and the physical problems inside with the prostate and all the other things, borderline diabetes and everything else, well, all those symptoms were gone. Bowel movement and urination, urinary tract and everything cleared and cleaned up, and just really everything was functioning well. And I was in amazement, and I kept looking at my body. I kept looking in the mirror at myself. And people would say, you sound different. You sound different. You don't stand the same. You walk different. And I do walk different, and I do stand different. And as I said to them the first Sunday I was able to be back, I'm not the same person that you knew. I'm not the same person that was here, that many of you claim to have seen on the 29th of December. I was not here. My stand-in was here. Somebody was here, but it wasn't me. And because I wasn't here at all, I was gone. And so from that point on, I have been humbled again by the experience, and I stand in humility before the Creator, which in great part is, I know my connection and your connection, and we are all part of that creative energy and creative source. And the things which were said, that I seen, that I saw, I want to use, as I said on my tape, as a format to do the things that we need to do.